Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. It is late 1932, come Christmas time. A young man, Ronald Reagan, is visiting Springfield, Illinois. His father, Jack, is running a shoe store to maintain what he can of an income for the family. It is the very, very, very dark days of the United States in what becomes the Great Depression. This is a moment when Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the disabled governor of New York, has been elected president, but it won't be until March that he takes office. Everything is dire, and we know that the banks are going to fail. So there is no prosperity anywhere. And yet Ronald Reagan records later what he saw of his father deeply, deeply hurt him, and he cried. I welcome a man who's told this story and all the others, his life and legend, Reagan, Max Boot. Max and I have history 20 years ago when Max was at the Wall Street Journal and he visited Iraq and came back and reported to me. So it's a great pleasure to welcome him to this show after all these years he's devoted to Ronald Reagan, away from his family, and now he gets to talk about it. Max, congratulations, a very good evening. Jack and Ron Reagan in that store that Reagan describes as a hole in the wall. What was Reagan's thoughts? Who was Jack? What do we need to know about his father? Good evening to you.
Yeah, good evening, and thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to talk about the book, and we can begin by, as you suggest, by talking about Jack Reagan, Ronald Reagan's father. And Jack was this kind of ne'er-do-well Irish-American shoe salesman who had a great gift of blarney, very charming, great raconteur, but his great weakness was demon rum. And he was an alcoholic, major drinking problem, and that contributed to a lot of the misery of Ronald Reagan's childhood, because Jack Reagan dreamed of opening his own shoe emporium, but instead he kept losing one job after another, and the family kept moving from one place to another. And this, you know, created a sense of dislocation in little Dutch Reagan's life, as Reagan was known when he was young, and meant that he never stayed in one place for very long. And he never really got close to the other kids, in part because he had this family secret. He didn't want people to know about his father's drinking. And so that fostered a remoteness, this mental barrier that he erected against other people from his earliest days of childhood. And it also led to his aversion to personality conflict. And we think of Reagan as being somebody who could be very confrontational in his politics, which was true. But in his private life, he was very non-confrontational, in part because, you know, he had seen so much confrontation as a boy between his father, Jack, and his mother, Nellie, who obviously was not very happy when Jack would go and spend the family's rent money on alcohol or disappear for days at a time on a bender. And so there were a lot of arguments through the thin walls of their rented houses. And Jack really reached his low point at the same time as the rest of the country reached their low point in 1932, as you alluded to, when, you know, he was working far from the family's home in Dixon, Illinois. He was working in Springfield, Illinois, and presiding over a decrepit shoe store that Ronald Reagan visited, and was very depressed to see the straits that his father was in. And even that didn't last long, because within a few weeks, Jack Reagan was fired and was out of work, like millions of other Americans. And so that was really a very low point in his life and the family's life, along with that of the rest of the country.
Ronald Reagan was born in a winter storm in 1911, and he has the nickname Dutch because the remark was made by his father. He was a cheerful, chubby little baby boy So he was called a fat Dutchman by his father, and Dutch is the nickname that stuck in his youth. We need to introduce his mother, Nellie, Disciples of Christ, extremely admirable, Protestant, marrying a man who did not practice his Roman Catholic religion. What do we need to remember about her as a young person caring for the children that inspired Reagan later?
Well, Nellie Reagan was very religious, and, you know, Dutch Reagan, her son, grew up in her faith, the Disciples of Christ. But while she was very religious, and she was really a do-gooder, I mean, she was somebody who spent all of her time ministering to patients at the hospital or inmates at the prison. She was somebody who was really committed to community service, but she was also in many ways a frustrated actress. And so from a very early age, Dutch Reagan and his brother Moon were being cast as extras in the plays that Nellie Reagan put on at community centers, at churches, these small halls throughout these small towns of the Midwest. And, you know, when Reagan's, when his ghostwriter for his post-presidential memoir was trying to push him for kind of a rosebud moment, some clue that unlocked who he became as from his childhood, he really struggled to find anything. But one thing he remembered was at age 10 or 11, being put on a stage by Nellie Reagan and liking the sound of the applause that he heard. So he kind of became an addict, addicted to the applause of the audience. And I think one other legacy from Nellie that is worth emphasizing is that she was a relentlessly positive, upbeat, optimistic, even Pollyannish person. She believed you always have to look on the sunny side of life and you can overcome any adversity. And that was incredibly integral to Ronald Reagan's psyche. He himself became extremely positive, upbeat, optimistic, to an extent that even frustrated, you know, his future wife, Nancy, or others, because they thought that he was ignoring some dismal realities. But that was really his legacy from Nellie, and it's what allowed him to cope with this very difficult childhood. And to always, he always put a very positive gloss on his childhood and remembered it as a quote-unquote Huck Finn idol, whereas in fact, it was a very difficult, even traumatic childhood. The family was very poor, the father losing one job after another, dealing with his alcoholism. But he always looked on the bright side of life, just as his mother Nellie had taught him.
In 1926-27 and afterwards, Ron Reagan, 15 years old, Dutch Reagan, wins a job thanks to his father's introduction for the Graybills to be a lifeguard at a community pool, a community river.
Yeah.
And that's, I read that, Max, as extremely determinative of how he thought of himself, both admired and necessary. Is that a clue to what he becomes later?
Absolutely. And this was a very formative experience for him. He spent most of his high school and college years in the summers working as a lifeguard on the Rock River. And during that time, he saved 77 people from drowning. And there are cynics of a later age who question that claim and suggest that maybe that there were some girls who just feigned drowning to be rescued by this handsome lifeguard. But in fact, I mean, I researched it as best as I could, and I concluded that he really had saved 77 people. And he became kind of a small town hero because of that. And I think that gave him a taste of what it was like to be renowned, admired, to be useful to the community. And, you know, Reagan himself was never very self-reflective. He was a very frustrating subject for interviewers. But I found a remark that he made in the late 1930s to a movie fan magazine. And by the way, movie fan magazines were one of my best sources on Ronald Reagan's life, because they were just such fascinating vignettes before he entered politics. But he made this comment to a movie fan magazine where he talked about why he liked being a lifeguard so much. And what he said was he liked sitting up on this high chair with everybody looking up at him. And I thought that was very revealing of his psyche.
I'm speaking with Max Boot, his life and legend. Reagan is the new biography. When we come back, father is rescued by the New Deal, and that is a significant political fact that Mr. Reagan will carry with him all the way through his years as a politician. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I'm John Batchelor with the author of a new biography of Ronald Reagan, Max Boot, His Life and Legend. The father, in the low point of his life in 32, has a job as an administrator of welfare for the New Deal in late 33. Jack is a troublesome person, but at the same time, he has his moments, as men who are suffer with addiction do. And he became very prominent in the town because he was the person to go to for money or loans. At the same time, his son is developing into a bright young football star at Eureka College, who's in love with a young woman whose father is a pastor, the Cleavers. What do we need to know about his early romance with the Cleavers, Max?
Well, Margaret Cleaver, whom he always called Muggs, was his steady girlfriend throughout high school and college. And part of the reason why he, in fact, attended Eureka College was to be with Margaret, who went to college there. And they were passionately in love. They were engaged to be married. Reagan thought he would spend his whole life with her. And then after graduation, they moved apart, and he was crushed when she returned his engagement ring, and she had made a trip to Europe and fell in love with this American diplomat in Europe who eventually left the Foreign Service, became a lawyer, and they settled in happy anonymity in Richmond, Virginia. And of course, Reagan went on to greater glory. But Margaret was very influential with him, and so was her father, the Reverend Cleaver. He was almost like a surrogate father to Dutch Reagan, and he had a series of surrogate fathers. And the Reverend Cleaver obviously was a pillar of the community, somebody who was obviously very religious. And I think, you know, along with Reagan's mother, he helped to infuse Reagan with some of his faith, provided, you know, much needed ballast for him in dealing with the storms occasioned by his alcoholic father.
Dutch Reagan can tell stories. Dutch Reagan has a magnificent voice for telling stories. It's compelling. It welcomes you. And this is a young man, and he turns to radio, which we're on right now, Max.
Yes.
He loved radio right away. It was his favorite modality. Why? What did he see in it?
Well, remember that in the early 1930s, I mean, Reagan graduated from college in 1932. At that time, that was the pre-television age. Radio was the mass communications medium along with movies. And Reagan's ultimate goal was to get into the movies because he was a pretty successful actor in high school and in college and in his high school and college drama clubs. But, you know, for a poor boy graduating from a tiny college in the Midwest in the height of the Great Depression, you know, going to Hollywood was as remote as going to the moon. He had no idea of how to get there. And so, but he very shrewdly figured out that while there were no movie studios in the Midwest, there were a lot of radio stations. And so he decided to take out that this would be an outlet for his theatrical talents. And he wound up getting a job at a radio station in Davenport, Iowa. And very soon he was so successful that he was transferred to a much larger and more powerful station in Des Moines, where he became known throughout the Midwest as Dutch Reagan, the voice of the Chicago Cubs and the White Sox. He became a very successful sportscaster. This was like, you know, the 1930s version of ESPN. He became a regional person of renown and was doing very successfully in the height of the Great Depression, even before he moved to Hollywood.
He also had a talent of being able to tell a story without actually seeing the game. It's a magical story that I remember being told early on when I first dealt with Ronald Reagan as an actor. Growing up in the 50s and 60s, he was on movies, a famous movie, sometimes with Errol Flynn in the Second War, very heroic figure, not what you'd call a dark leading man, somebody capable of Flynn to being self-centered. He was always sunny. Even especially in Hollywood, and let's go right to Hollywood. He was B-list at Warner's. What did that mean, Max?
Well, in those days, there were A-list pictures and B-list pictures. The A-list pictures, as the name implies, were the ones that cost the most, had the biggest stars, the best production. Those were the kind of the headlining pictures. But you know, and this is really taking us back to a long lost era of movie going. But you know, in the 30s and 40s, people would go to their local movie house and not just to see one picture. They would see a newsreel, and they would see a cartoon, and they would see a B-list picture or a short, and then they would see the A picture. And so the B pictures were the much cheaper, hokier, shorter fare that the studios churned out to release along with their more expensive pictures. And Reagan initially started out in these B pictures, and he did, for example, a series of pictures playing brass Bancroft treasury agent T-Man, which I would not recommend to anybody. I watched those movies, and they're pretty horrifically bad, especially to anybody who's used to, you know, the current level of production from the movie industry. I mean, the special effects were so hokey, so cheap, but people, you know, people liked it in the late 1930s. It provided an escape from their own troubles. And, you know, people would just go and spend an evening at the movies, and often watching Ronald Reagan in the dark.
The movie career pays well, and he's doing extremely well. I think he moves his parents out to Hollywood, takes very good care of them. His father died in 41. His mother lived into the 60s. His brother Neil is also in Hollywood as an actor and then eventually as an agent. So Ronald Reagan is very responsible to his family. And he's a young, very handsome actor, recognized by the fan magazines. And he meets another young actor, actress, who will be determinative of his opinion of himself. Her name, Jane Wyman. Born 1917, 21 years old when they first met at the Warner Brothers commissary. The story is that she asked him to sit at her table and flirted with him. She later said she liked him right away. But it wasn't until they did a movie together in 1938 about the Virginia Military Institute, Brother Rat, that they became a couple. The courtship was too long for Jane Wyman, and there is the story that she overdosed on pills and was hospitalized, an event, it is said, that led to their engagement in November 1939. "We hope to stay married forever," was Jane Wyman's remark to a reporter, and their marriage in January 1950. When we come back, the Wyman-Reagan marriage, as long as it lasts. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm with Max Boot. His new book is His Life and Legend, Reagan, The Story of Ronald Reagan. It's Hollywood. It's 1948. And in a movie that they star in together, he meets a woman named Jane Wyman, who's been in Hollywood for a number of years. She comes from the Midwest, as Ronald Reagan does. And she is a femme fatale. She will become one of the great actresses of this period. Not when she meets Reagan, however. She's still in B movies. Max, I can't figure this marriage out. Can you? It is an odd combination.
Well, it sort of makes sense because Jane Wyman had come out to Hollywood at a very early age, and as you can imagine, for an attractive actress of that era, it was a very difficult life, right? I mean, she had to be constantly fighting off people who were trying to get her onto the casting couch. This was, you know, the long before the Me Too era. It was, you really had to be very tough and deal with a lot of traumatic things to be an actress. And I think part of what attracted Jane Wyman to part of the reason why Jane Wyman was attracted to Ronald Reagan was because he was such a nice guy. He was not a guy who would take advantage of her. He was kind of her white knight. He was always a gentleman, or so she thought. And he was somebody who would kind of protect her from the predators in Hollywood. And so And she, you know, he was also, you know, very easy on the eyes. He was a very handsome guy. You know, he was touted as a beefcake in the movie magazines of the late 1930s. And so, you know, she fell for him and wanted to marry him, but found that, as others had were defined, it was very hard to get Ronald Reagan to commit. He was, happy to hang out with Jane Wyman, and she became, he had kind of a rat pack of friends from the Midwest and who followed him to LA, and she hung out with them. But he wasn't that eager to march down the aisle. And so she had to undertake a campaign to get him to commit, which included feigning interest in the outdoorsy activities that he loved so much. And finally, he gave in, and they got married.
Two children followed, and we need to note here that there's about to be a rupture in Ronald Reagan's life that introduces him into becoming a libertine for a time. And that is Jane Wyman getting a part, realizes that her career is taking off, though she's had two children and she's married, and that career will blossom. She becomes one of the great actresses of her era. Her big break is Lost Weekend, about an alcoholic played by Ray Milland. There's irony within every biography, Max, and you find it. My goodness. However, we need to get to the politics of Hollywood at this point. Does the divorce rock Reagan so that he moves into the Screen Actors Guild, or was that happening at the same time of the divorce?
It was happening at the same time. This is we're moving ahead a few years. What happened was on the eve of World War II, when Reagan was marrying Jane Wyman, Reagan's star was really ascending. He was, making movies like Newt Rockne All-American. He was, being given equal billing with Errol Flynn and other top Warner Brothers stars. So he was actually ascending to the A-list. But then the war derailed his career, even though he never went anywhere. He spent the entire World War II in Hollywood and Culver City making propaganda and training films for the Air Force, but he wasn't making commercial movies. And by the time the war ended in 1945 and Reagan got out, he did not find as much of a market for his movie making as he had before the war. And so he was, there were other actors, John Wayne and Gregory Peck and others, who were overshadowing him. And so without much demand for his services at the studio, he became more active in the Screen Actors Guild and Hollywood politics, and he gave a lot of speeches on politics. And at that time, he was a very idealistic liberal, still a New Dealer. But he and Jane Wyman were going in opposite directions because Jane's career, as you were alluding to, was taking off after the war. She was going from the B-list to becoming an Oscar-winning actress, one of the leading actresses in Hollywood. And she was intensely focused on her acting career and was not really interested in politics, which was increasingly what Reagan was interested in. And so they just kind of drifted apart.
The politics of the moment had to do with Congress and the search for communists everywhere, especially in Hollywood, that made spectacular hearings before Congress. This is HUAC, the House on American Activities. And Ronald Reagan was, I believe it was an unpaid job, but not paid very well, to be president of the Screen Actors Guild. I couldn't tell because he's so. It's difficult to know where he was on this. He didn't protect anybody, but at the same time, did he throw himself into the investigation? Did he become a red hunter? How to present where he was in the politics of the moment?
He navigated the treacherous politics of the McCarthy era very skillfully. He testified before the House on American Affairs Committee and actually sounded like a liberal. And he said that, he didn't believe that the Communist Party should be banned. He refused to name names of suspected communists, unlike many of his peers in the movie industry. And he was actually applauded by liberal journalists, but at the same time, quietly behind the scenes, he was acting as an FBI informant, and he was providing names to the FBI and even privately telling the FBI that he thought that the Communist Party should be banned. And so he basically managed to cover both his left and right flanks. A lot of people had their lives destroyed by the witch hunt era of red hunting. But Reagan's career was actually enhanced by the way that he skillfully navigated those politics.
The divorce is 1948. At one point, Max says that Reagan was running up $750 bills at nightclubs in one night. And going
Yes.
At that point, is he drinking heavily? Can we tell? Does he have the problem his father had?
No, I don't think he ever drank heavily. He was always afraid of alcohol based on his father's experience. And his typical pattern would be to nurse a single cocktail through the evening. But this was the one period of his life where he was womanizing. And you don't think of Ronald Reagan, the ultimate family man or the ultimate husband, as being a womanizer. But he was, after Jane Wyman divorced him, and it was really Jane's initiative to divorce him. He was shocked by that and kind of left adrift and you know, went through a series of hookups with various Hollywood actresses before Nancy Davis finally appeared in his life.
Nancy Davis, very important figure here. She is not going to be an actress, but she starts out in that direction. This marriage makes sense, and they were very, very keen on each other right away. There's a photograph in Max's book that tells you everything you need to know about how Nancy listened to Ron Reagan, who was a wonderful raconteur, could talk on many subjects. At the same time, you need to know the rest of Max's book makes it very clear that Nancy's in charge. Did he know that? Did that relax him? Is she Nellie?
Yes, he needed a strong woman in his life, and Nellie, his mother, had looked out for him when he was younger, and that was kind of the role that Nancy Reagan assumed for herself. And she was, you know, although Nancy had a movie career, she was not nearly the actress that Jane Wyman was, and she didn't want to be an actress. She wanted to be a wife and a mother, and her thinking was that if she continued her career, she might lose her husband, as Jane Wyman and Ronald Reagan had split up, and that was the last thing that Nancy wanted. And so she threw herself into being kind of the perfect wife. Now, she was not a perfect mother, and they had a kind of a tortuous and even dysfunctional family dynamics. And Nancy completely did not get along with her daughter, Patty Davis. And that was a lifelong source of pain to both of them. And she did not really get along well with her husband's kids from his first marriage, Michael and Maureen Reagan. But her priority was her husband and doing everything possible to further Ronald Reagan's career. And I think she was absolutely integral to that, not only because she was such a supportive and helpful partner, but because she also became a fairly shrewd political figure. And as one of Reagan's aides told me, Nancy Reagan was really the HR department of Reagan Inc. She was the person who often hired and fired on his behalf. And a lot of that is due to their very different personalities, because Ronald Reagan, as we've been discussing, was very sunny, very upbeat, always saw the best in everybody, whereas Nancy Reagan was totally different. She was a worrywart. She assumed everybody was out to get him unless proven otherwise. And so she kind of developed these protective instincts that greatly aided Reagan's political rise.
Television. Max Boot is the author of Reagan, His Life and Legend. Ronald Reagan's headed to television and great success. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I'm John Batchelor, visiting with Max Boot, the author of the new book, Reagan, His Life and Legend. I believe it's Mike Deaver later in the White House who says television is the presidency. And we're about to see that demonstrated. There's a General Electric Theater. There's Borax, the 21 Mule. I remember that vividly, Max, in black and white. Ronald Reagan is a perfect TV presenter. The movie career is unnecessary. He's earning very, very good money from GE and from mixing with corporate leadership in the 50s and early 60s. But we need to get back to politics. Politics can push the audience away. However, he became attached to what becomes the Goldwater part of the early Republican conservative movement. What convinced him? Was it talking to GE executives? Is that why he went from New Dealer to Goldwaterite?
Well, Reagan's own explanation was he often said, I didn't desert my party deserted me, to imply that the Democratic Party had veered far to the left and he had stayed in the center. And as I show in the book, that's not really accurate, because the Democratic Party in the 1950s was still pretty centrist. I mean, in 1960, John F. Kennedy actually ran to Richard Nixon's right on defense policy. So it wasn't the Democrats who had changed, it was Reagan. And I trace the transformation beginning in World War II, when as a pretty highly, very highly paid actor, Ronald Reagan was very unhappy to be paying 90% rates of income taxation during the war. And then after the war, as we discussed, he became involved in the Red Hunts in Hollywood and became a very hardline anti-communist. And then his transformation was really complete in the 1950s when he was a spokesman for General Electric and host of the General Electric Theater, because in those days, GE was a very conservative company, and they viewed spreading free market propaganda as being an inoculation against union troubles. And so they made sure that all of their managers and employees were exposed to a host of conservative viewpoints. And Ronald Reagan himself was a very avid reader, and he had a lot of time to read because in those days he was afraid to fly. And so he would take the train from LA to New York to speak on behalf of GE. And during these long train rides, he would be reading National Review or Human Events or Hayek or Whitaker Chambers or others. And so he became a very staunch conservative by the early 1960s and wound up becoming a prominent supporter of Barry Goldwater's in 1964, moving very far from his New Deal roots as an avid FDR supporter in the 1930s.
The campaign of 1964 won handily by Lyndon Johnson, the vice president who accepted the role of president after the assassination of Jack Kennedy. The speech, what is that? What are we talking about when we talk about the speech, Max?
The speech was this national television address that Ronald Reagan delivered on behalf of Barry Goldwater a few weeks before the 1964 election. The campaign bought half an hour of airtime for Reagan to deliver the speech, which was called a Time for Choosing, but became known simply as the speech. And it was really Ronald Reagan's debut on the national political stage. And it was this brilliant piece of oratory that, in fact, in many ways overshadowed Barry Goldwater, because Reagan made the case for Goldwater better than Goldwater could make it for himself. And the thing that people were shocked to see this Hollywood actor, speaking so fluently about politics. And what they didn't realize is he'd actually been honing that speech for a decade as a GE spokesman, where, he had developed his tried and true tactic of using index cards. And he would write down arguments or facts or anecdotes, quotes, some accurate, some not, on index cards. And then he would shuffle those index cards before he gave a speech. So he never gave the same speech twice. And then he would judge the audience reaction. And the cards that resonated stayed in the pile. The ones that didn't resonate went in the trash can. And so by 1964, he had a highly honed speech. And the speech that he gave on behalf of Barry Goldwater was really one he had been developing for a decade. And it was a mesmerizing entrance into the national political arena for Ronald Reagan.
In 1966, Ronald Reagan will decide to run for governor against the sitting governor, Pat Brown. Was that Nancy's decision to do that? Did she welcome the governor's mansion?
No, it was really Ronald Reagan. I think it's a misnomer to say that Nancy Reagan had any great desire for her husband to go into politics. I don't think that's true. She would have been very happy to live a nice life in Beverly Hills, going out to lunch with her friends and staying far from politics. She did not have any particularly strong political views. The only reason that Reagan went into politics was because he was so interested in politics, and Nancy fully supported him because she knew how important that was to him. But she was not the driving force. She was certainly shaped his campaign and was an important advisor. But it was really Reagan himself who had the political interest, the political drive, the political ambition, even though he kind of camouflaged it and hid it behind this kind of aw shucks, Mr. Smith goes to Sacramento veneer, where he pretended that he was just listening to the call of the people and answering the summons to serve. But in fact, it was really his political ambition that was the driving force.
First time I met Ronald Reagan as a politician was spring, summer of 1969, the People's Park. All of a sudden, this jovial, get along to go along actor turned into being a governor who issued an order to shoot, I have to say, Max, there was reason to believe, shoot to kill at People's Park.
Well, there wasn't a shoot to kill order, but there was no question that that the police during the People's Park demonstrations used excessive force, and a couple of people died. I mean, I think the handling of the college protests on California campuses, I think that was a low point in Reagan's tenure as governor, because he was very confrontational. He had very hardline rhetoric, saying that, you know, if it takes a bloodbath to restore order, that's what we'll do if necessary. And he didn't order a bloodbath. He didn't order any shoot to kill or anything like that. But he kind of escalated instead of trying to de-escalate. And he kind of gave the student radicals what they wanted, which was a confrontation with the establishment. And it was not a successful approach in terms of restoring order, but it was successful in terms of politically, because, you know, middle class Californians liked that he was getting tough with these supposed hippies and radicals on college campuses.
Richard Nixon is president, and Richard Nixon favored Ronald Reagan. And you present the plan that Ronald Reagan was to succeed Richard Nixon. Is that correct?
Well, that was certainly the plan in Ronald Reagan's mind. And he was, you know, an avid supporter of Richard Nixon. Nixon himself did not have much respect for Reagan. And it's kind of amusing to listen to the White House tapes where Kissinger and Nixon talk about how stupid Reagan is, how he doesn't have any understanding of the world. He doesn't know what's going on. But nevertheless, Nixon didn't really respect Reagan, but he was afraid of him because he understood that Reagan was very popular. And so he tried to, keep him happy and send him as an envoy to various right-wing dictators around the world. And Reagan was very, you know, devoted to Nixon, such to the extent that during the Watergate scandal, Reagan was completely supportive of Nixon, claimed he had done nothing wrong. And, you know, again, Reagan's expectation was that Nixon would serve 8 years, and that Reagan, after two successful terms as governor of California, would be seen as the natural successor. So Reagan was shocked in 1974 when Nixon had to resign from office and Gerry Ford became president, thereby seemingly blocking Reagan's own path to the White House and setting up this titanic primary showdown, which he launched.
The book is Reagan, His Life and Legend. Max Boot is the author. We're going to turn now to the presidency. Ronald Reagan running for the presidency very hard in 76, very hard in 80, and then his term in office. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend, because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com, SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.